After a larger-than-expected election win, Argentinian libertarian Javier Milei is pledging a new political era. I'm Sky Nohuesen on this episode of 360 View. We're going to look at the newest round of outsiders being elected around the globe and what this could mean for the international landscape. Let's get started. There are two types of rebellions, military and political. One involves weapons and the other involves votes. Both can achieve the same result, change. Recently in Argentina, riding what has been termed voter anger at the mainstream, Javier Milei found himself the winner with 56% of the vote.
Today, the impoverishing, omnipresent state model is over. Today, the idea that the state is a spoils to be shared among politicians and their friends is over.
Now, there is no doubt frustration amongst the Argentinian population at the lack of work, inflation, and a broad scale of poverty which has taken over the nation. The Argentina presidential election has expressed contempt for socialism, the left, and the government as the center of the country's problems.
Zurdos, hijos de puta, tiemblen! La libertad avanza! ¡Viva la libertad, carajo! ¡Vamos!
A situation which seems oddly familiar to Western countries like the United States and the UK, with Argentina also suffering the largest national debt in history, 150% inflation, and lots of government inflation. Milei, who on all accounts seems to follow the personality of former President Donald Trump, with his brash and bold public statements and his conservative stances on looser gun controls, anti-abortion, and criticism of Argentine Pope Francis, pledged to achieve the end of Argentina's decay by dramatically reducing the size of government, promotion of free trade, and restoring a respect for private property.
Ministerio de Educación, adoctrinamiento, afuera. Ministerio de Transporte, afuera. Ministerio de Salud, afuera.
Now, to visualize his commitment to slashing the government, Milei frequently waved around a chainsaw at campaign events. Now, Milei also wanted to adapt the dollar as the current country's currency and has pledged to abolish Argentina's central bank. So to drive this point home, he beat a bank-shaped piñata with a baseball bat on live television. But is this more about a rebellion from the current environment in Argentina or about choosing the best leader? Well, let's ask our panel. Esteban Carrillo, editor, The Cradle. Arne Menconi, founder, SOS Outreach, and former county commissioner, climate and social justice journalist. And Angela McArdle, chair, Libertarian National Committee. Thank you so much for joining me on this very important issue. I want to start off with you, Esteban. What can one assess about the current environment of a country when the people choose to make such a dramatic change in leadership?
Hi, Scotty. Thank you so much for having me on. Well, as you said, this is a country that is battling such high inflation levels, such a devalued currency. About 50% of the population lives under the poverty rate. This is a message. This is a message to the politicians, to the establishment. By picking someone like Milei, they're essentially saying, what else can go wrong? And sadly, I believe we're about to find out. Because Javier Milei, his policies, to say they're extreme, it's a bit of an understatement. He wants to slash essentially every single government agency. He has talked about legalizing the organ sales. He has, talked about dollarizing the economy, shock therapy. He's coming in. One of his campaign closing events was him waving around a chainsaw. And now we're going to see what that chainsaw is going to do to the Argentinian state, which has already been so battered over the past few years. And I think it's also a particular message to the leftists who just left power, who sadly were unable to confront almost all of these issues that were plaguing the Argentinian people. And now, they opened the door for this man who makes someone like Jair Bolsonaro look like a child's play.
Well, it's obvious that you have some concerns, and I think you have some very valid points on that. Arnn, I've got to ask you, do you have any concerns about Javier Milei, about his campaign style? That was a lot of the issues just described. And it was also based on a lot of these lofty promises, the dramatic attention-getting moments. But did he ever actually say that you have found how he was going to fulfill these promises?
Yeah, I don't know how he's going to fulfill them because he has such a small majority in the parliament of people from his own party. His character kind of, it doesn't it feel like each decade, the people who are winning in certain elections, they're getting a bit crazier and crazier. When I first saw him come on, I wondered if this was a joke, if he could pick it up. I have friends who are down in Argentina, and I just can't imagine him being able to make such a shift from one extreme to another in many of his policies, merely because I don't think he can garner the votes in the parliament. And I think there's such drastic changes, like going from the pesos to the U.S. dollar, that would be hard to do. But he did win probably because the amount of corruption that was going on and the amount of inflation that was happening in the country.
As you look at right now this election, do you think that he is a traditional libertarian, which is usually someone that wants to get the government as much out of the business of the daily lives of people? Does he fall into the category of what the traditional definition of a libertarian is?
Yes. I've had some really lively, spirited calls with his campaign staff, and he is a Rothbardian libertarian. He refers to himself as an anarcho-capitalist. He wants to get rid of as much government as possible. And I'm super excited about it. You know, we're cheering him on in the United States. We want him to get as much done as he possibly can. Certainly, we anticipate a lot of gridlock, and people are going to put up roadblocks for him. But, you know, we're optimistic.
Okay, well, let me say one of the roadblocks or one of the red flags I see, Angela, and I just want to continue this conversation with you. Is it fair to say that Joe Biden is oddly not upset over the election of someone who is considered to be a far-right, more libertarian candidate, exactly opposite of what Joe Biden is in the United States? You know, almost immediately we saw Jake Sullivan tweeting out his congratulations. President Biden himself had a conversation 5 days later congratulating. Why do you think this is, and do you think this has anything to do with the fact that Milei is promising to ditch the peso for the U.S. dollar?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's because of that.
That one issue right there is why Biden likes him.
That's the one issue. Well, we're talking about someone who, you know, clearly, you know, like he's spoon-fed his oatmeal in the morning. I don't think there's a lot necessarily going on there. But I'm sure that he's really glad that Argentina is going to be adopting the U.S. dollar and not sticking with BRICS and trying to ally themselves with countries that the United States government views as adversarial right now. And, you know, I think that Argentina needs to do what's best for Argentina. If they think right now that sticking to the U.S. dollar is going to be what helps them, then, you know, I trust them to make that decision on their own. I don't know if I would do that, but, you know, it's a very different situation. That's what's going on in the United States. They're in a very bad place economically. And I think that he's probably trying to find a quick fix. Certainly, I'd love for us all to, you know, just ditch the dollar and go to Bitcoin. But I don't know how realistic that is for the people of Argentina right now.
Well, and that's the thing, Esteban, you mentioned some of these various policies that he had thrown out there. Is it realistic, do you think, to think that Milei will be able to rid the government of all of these bureaucratic offices and deliver reforms that he promised? And what happens if he fails to deliver on his most promoted campaign promise? What happens to him?
I don't think it's very likely that he can achieve, as was said just a few minutes ago, he doesn't have really a parliamentary majority. And it's worth mentioning that this is a man that ran on a platform of being the outsider, anti-establishment. But what happened after the first round, when they headed to the runoff, he had to sit down with Mauricio Macri, former president, because he needed his support. And it was because of the support of the establishment that he is now headed to the Casa Rosada, to the presidential palace, to implement everything that he has promised. And now he's getting people from Macri's party to, you know, fill in for the Interior Ministry, the person who was running for Macri's party, Patricia Bullrich, is going to be his Interior Minister. This woman that he at one point said she was responsible for planting bombs in kindergartens. Same with the finance minister, a man he accused of creating one of the largest frauds, or as he refers to in the central bank. So I think, you know, Milei right now is kind of getting this show that he needs to actually sit down and make deals. And he has been making deals, and we will have to see what his voters say about that, because this is not anti-establishment, this is working with the establishment. And if the Congress is actually going to let him, dollarize the economy and give over economic sovereignty back to the United States, to the U.S. Treasury.
Okay, this sounds like a great time to take a break. Arn, we're going to come right back to you after the break, because Milei was not the only official elected in recent days, which shows there's this revolt from current administrations. We're going to examine and discuss after the break. Welcome back. I'm Skynell Hughes, and you're watching the 360 View. Now, on November 22nd, ultra-right wing and populist leader Geert Wilders took many by surprise in the Dutch elections with his Party for Freedom victory. Now, since the election day, Wilders has faced a few problems in forming his coalition, but not as many as some of the leaders of the European Union who are fearful he is going to create for them. I want to continue our discussion with our panel, Esteban Carrillo, editor of The Cradle, Arn Menconi, founder, SOS Outreach and former county commissioner, climate and social justice journalist, and Angela McArdle, chair, Libertarian National Committee. You know, before the break, I want to give you a chance right now to look, Arn, and what your thoughts were as to why you saw someone that from a populist movement like Javier Milei be elected in Argentina. Is it frustrations at the administration? Is it something, or frustrations at the people in the situation more? Or is it the same thing?
Well, I think in Holland, you may have a little bit of a wedge issue that's going on here with the farmers that voted for him because of the concern of some of the regulations that are coming down the tubes in Netherlands for climate protection. And we're seeing this across the board, where we're having the pendulum swinging from one extreme to another. It's just getting much more complicated and much more extreme. We're seeing it in Hungary. We've seen it in Italy. And you had a very, very tight election in Spain just recently. So I think this swing to the far right mostly is coming out of, I'll be careful how I say this, but maybe not as well informed of a voter who is looking for a change, and also with the concerns of immigration and what's happening in Europe.
Angela, I saw you shaking your head at the very beginning, and then it kind of stopped. Do you agree with this idea? Also, on the same idea, is there's the extreme on one side. There's also the extreme on the other side as well.
I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about extremes, but some of it is just common sense. And I think that that's what a lot of populist waves catch on to, whether it's Ron Paul or Bernie Sanders or politicians in the Netherlands. People have a sniff test, and things don't always pass it. And the agricultural policies that were coming out in the Netherlands were just absolutely insane. People are absolutely sick of World Economic Forum, Green New Deal style terrorism, and the agricultural industry in the Netherlands is huge. And people said, absolutely not. We can't take it. We can't sustain this, you know, which is, it's pretty insane too, because technological innovation is what really advances agriculture and also keeps up with, you know, what the left view as a sustainability, you know, but certainly in my opinion, if something's not profitable, it's not sustainable. And so I'm very happy for the people in the Netherlands who are sending a strong rebuke to ridiculous policies, to previous administrations, and I wish them the best of luck.
Well, that's the thing. And you look at what happened in the Netherlands, you look at Argentina. Esteban, you know, do you feel like there's any correlation between the two? And does this speak about a bigger movement than just Geert Wilders' victory and the people in Amsterdam, the Argentinian people choosing the libertarian? Is this just a coincidence that this is happening at this point in time at the same time?
I think it's the outcome of what we've been seeing across the world, you know, this turn to the extremes, and in particular towards the far right, in the sense that it's become a kind of a phenomenon. But I would describe it more as a media phenomenon that gives platforms to a certain individual like Javier Milei, like Jair Bolsonaro, who espoused very extreme ideology and rhetoric and used very, you know, outrageous words and insults. And this feeds into television ratings. And that translate has been translating lately into electoral victories. So I think it's at least in Latin America, I would describe it as a media phenomenon, much more than an actual political phenomenon, because it speaks to the need of the people, but it also, you know, puts certain these characters in a position to attain actual political power.
You know, Arne, you look at what's going on, like, say, in a country, Spain. You've had mass protests happen in the streets. You've had other mass protests in France and on other issues. A lot of the times have to do with environmental issues or social issues. But in this case, when people are being driven to the polls on Election Day and you're seeing this mass rebellion and the switch over in the administration, it's on other issues. It's on government issues, not necessarily social issues. Do you find that to be interesting? And does that show how the difference is between the two ways of protesting right now? And what does this mean moving forward, especially for like the European Union, where everything kind of coincides with each other?
Well, I won't make a global issue on these three different countries talking about, because each one has an economic or political problem that is occurring in it. And Spain, Sanchez had, in order to stay in power, had to make a deal with the Catalan amnesty, which was potentially one of the reasons why there was such a massive protest of 170,000 people. But to go back to something else that has been said, to put World Economic Forum and Green New Deal in the same breath as though they're allied to one another, as a climate activist and as a person who's run for U.S. Senate on the Green New Deal, that's false. What's happening with the climate science that's coming out is that we only have, it's getting worse instead of better with all of the information that's going on. And I don't think people who are going into the voting booth are necessarily voting on a climate issue. But for Holland, where I've been, a socialist country, to go that far to the right is very unique, very unusual. And we aren't talking about the independent voters who come out at these major elections and are typically voting for reform of change, get the bum out who was ever in office. Climate change is coming down the tubes faster than anybody. And if government policy is not going to correct our addiction to fossil fuel and think that the free market system is going to correct the problem, I think we're all delusional.
Well, Angela, on that point, there is a correlation, though, between climate change policies that have been enacted by the government that have actually hurt the economy. I think that's what we're finding in Amsterdam. Why you saw the overwhelming of Geert Wilders' party able to take over was because the climate change policies that had nothing to do with climate change, but more about government regulation and control. And the people got angry and they went to the voters' booth. Angela, help me out on this.
Sure. People are tired of being scammed. We're tired of climate fear mongering. We don't want to see people like Greta Thunberg up, you know, screaming and crying, how dare you? We just want to live our lives. We're not in a position where we can get off of fossil fuels. It would be economic suicide. It would plunge the Western world into poverty and darkness. And it's also incredibly like Eurocentric and a little bit stuck up and maybe even racist to assume that we should plunge developing countries back into darkness and take away something that would plunge them upward into economic mobility. And that's fossil fuels. So we should all just sort of cool our jets and check our egos when it comes to the climate wars. And we should allow technological advances to pull us up and clean up the environment as it all happens naturally and beautifully. And that's the beauty of the free market and one of the reasons I love it.
Well, and I want to get back to our original discussion talking about the leadership that's being enacted, that is being elected because of these policies, because the EU is a bit different, and I want to look at and I want to go to you on this, Esteban, because everything kind of happens based on the decisions of their neighbors. Do you think that voters are choosing to put leaders like Wilders, Francis, Marine Le Pen, Viktor Orban in Hungary based off of what's happening within their own country, or are they also looking at international issues and factors?
No, I think it is largely related to the internal issues that the people face, in particular in Europe, you know. That's why we're seeing such a big anti-immigration sentiment in many ways across Europe. But this is also, you know, an outcome of the practices and the policies of these developed countries towards the underdeveloped world. So I do think that, you know, when you see a high unemployment rates, when you see inflation, and even now, you know, with the war in Ukraine, with the loss of access to Russian fuel, what's been happening in Europe, there is large discontent. We've seen the protests in France, the protests in Spain. People need change. They are screaming for change in the streets, and this is pushing them to pick these leaders who are, you know, who are coming up from one extreme or another, and who are offering some kind of you know, a magic bullet that will solve their problems. And we still have to see if any of them actually have the answer, though.
Well, it's interesting because on the contrary. There's Poland, who actually went to the populist movement 8 years ago and has actually suffered a loss and is losing control. Why do you think this is? This is almost a rebellion for what we're finding in these other countries around the world.
I'm going to take it up a level and just say what we have is what I call the global corporate mafia. So let's forget the political spectrums for a second and just look at the powers and the corporations and the money behind these type of elections that are constantly dividing the citizens of each one of these countries that are not trying to, that aren't getting the type of benefits that the corporate or the very elite or the oligarchs are getting. We have the money to fix climate change. We have a COP28 that's taking place next week, and it's being hijacked by the fossil fuel industry and the CEOs of the oil and gas industry. So before we leave the show, let's just make sure we talk about the elephant in the room, and that is the incredible amount of wealth concentrated in the top 1% that is affecting all of these elections. And the more imbalance that's going on with the electorate, the more confusion, the more anger we're going to see these shifts from one side to the other. And what's happening with the movement to the right is the Democrat, the liberal, the centrist party is moving further to the right.
Arn, I can't disagree with you any more than I could, except I have to point out, it's those lower levels are the ones that are electing and asking the change. It is the voter electorate that is not the 1% that's saying, we don't like who's in power now, we're going en masse, we're engaged, and we're the ones trying something new by putting these more outsiders into office. I want to thank you for joining me, all three of you. This has been a very good, very intelligent conversation on a wide variety of issues. Thank you. Okay, I'm not going to lie. It is very entertaining to watch leaders with chainsaws cut down a big block of wood as symbolism for what they want to do for the government. Just like it's very appealing to watch a charismatic speaker give hope to a crowd, life will be better once they are elected. The problem is, as recent history has shown, with charismatic leaders like Donald Trump and Jair Bolsonaro, sometimes it's a lot harder to accomplish these promises and these lofty goals. Sometimes the biggest hurdles are those also in power, either elected or appointed, with whom they must work alongside with. And while their intentions might be the best, their failure can have devastating effects for years to come, including their own defeat. This large disappointment coming from the people who expected their politicians to be some form of modern-day superhero, turns into disengagement and mistrust. But despite opportunities given and then lost by these recent examples of non-traditional outsider charismatic candidates, the people still have hope when they look to elect candidates like Javier Milei to make a difference, even if all the odds are already against him. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 View. Thank you for watching.